is No Filter Sports, another edition, this one being recorded on November 2nd, 2020. Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, and Fred Heumann filling in for Denny McClain, who has the day off. We were just speculating on what he has to do. I think he's on the road somewhere doing something, but the three of us will carry on in his stead. In fact, when we get to be do this day in sports, this was the day that Denny won his Cy Young Award back in 1968. Really? We'll get back into that a little bit.
I feel like John Hiller filling in on the starting rotation for him today.
I should ask you this, Freddie, when Denny was on instead of today. But this, people can't see us here on our little closed circuit Zoom feed. Yeah. That you got this big picture of Denny in his prime with that high right over the shoulder in your den where you live in mid-Michigan. Is that always there?
No, I brought it in for this. I have two of those. One's of Mickey Lolich and one is of Denny McClain, and I just don't have any place to hang him. And my wife wants me to throw him out like she wants me to throw everything out. That's why.
Well, on your other shoulder, you got a picture of a typical mid-Michigan winter scene with snow everywhere. You don't need to be reminded of that. It snowed this weekend, right? Take that down and put Denny up.
That was not my choice. That would be hers. Anyway.
By the way, the Cy Young Award through 1966 was just one player in both leagues. Koufax was the last one. They changed it in 67. Imagine 2 years after that in 68, if there had only been one award to give out and you had Bob Gibson and Denny McClain to choose from.
That's a great point. 1.12 against 31 victories. I'd never thought of that. How would you choose?
Somebody would have to win.
Wow.
Anyway, with all going on in the world of sports, there's one overwhelming, overarching story, which points to so much about sports in general, about sports in our state, about college football, about point spreads, about betting, about loyalties, and that is Michigan State's quote-unquote upset victory over Michigan 27-24. How a 24-point favorite can lose and lose sound. I think the game was not as close as 27-24. What do you guys think?
Actually, I agree with that, and I agree with your first statement because I wasn't on last week, but if I had been on last week, I would have made the stupid statement. I really would have, that few times in my life have I thought it was impossible for a team to win a game. I thought the 25-point spread was absurd, okay? I took Michigan State, I would have, or I did some radio shows, and I said, take Michigan State in the points. But I was saying that based on this could be a 17 or 20-point game. And I would have said, I'm glad I didn't anywhere, I would have said, because in my mind I thought, this is a strange twist in sports. In this storied rivalry, one team has no chance to win. I thought there was no chance. This is how sports fools us.
It is.
I thought there was no chance Michigan State could win this game, and they did, and I still can't believe it as I sit here 2 days later.
You know what? I'm going to go to the bathroom right now because you just took every word out of my mouth. There's no reason for me to say anything because you said every single thing I was going to say. But, you know, part of this, Freddie, part of this was, you know, we looked at the Michigan's opening game because, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen. And boy, Minnesota, but PJ Fleck doing a great job there, man. And they're ranked 21 in the country. And Michigan goes into Minneapolis and they win. That's impressive. And then Friday night, Minnesota goes to Maryland and Maryland beats them in overtime. The same Maryland team that had been humiliated by Northwestern 43-3 in the opener. So I don't know if it's COVID, it's craziness, the way the world is crazy or what, but man, this is crazy.
I think you're right in terms of the what COVID has done to the season. So it makes, you know, sports is predictable unpredictability. And so it's all the more so in this. But yes, this is what's beautiful about sports. Michigan was the favorite for legitimate statistical and observable reasons. They win surprisingly big. MSU loses surprisingly badly for a new coach we know little about. And the complete opposite happens. This happens in sports, more so in college football than otherwise. But, you know, there's another thing here. And I wonder if it's possible. My old roommate, Don, which watched every Michigan game since 1968 when we both arrived in Ann Arbor, said the other day, he said, I'm disconnecting. I'm not going to read any game reports, look at any quotes, Twitter exchanges, nothing like that. And is it possible to become apathetic towards Michigan football? Have people been beat up enough in the Harbaugh era? You get your hopes up. You say, he's still Jimmy Harbaugh. We're going to be great. And now a coach like Tucker comes in who you know, the ugliness of his departure at Colorado. He's kind of like, is this a good hire or not? And yet he puts it to Michigan with a team that played harder, played better, seemed to want it more, had a quarterback who we all doubted, where's the Michigan State quarterback? This guy's got no experience. It goes to show, like I say, the unpredictable predictability or vice versa. Yeah. But I just wonder, are Michigan fans, are they going to back away and change their expectations?
No. They're furious. They're as passionate as ever. And they're out there clamoring for Harbaugh's ass.
Right. Who's clamoring?
You know, Michigan football fans everywhere.
Tell us, where are you seeing it? Where are you seeing it on Twitter and everything? Where are you seeing this? How are you coming about? How are you coming to this information?
If you'd like to look at social media, you have your own account, as a matter of fact, on Facebook, don't you? Why don't you go to Facebook and see what Michigan football fans are saying about a guy who is now, 1-6 versus Michigan and Ohio State? Make sure I get these numbers right.
No, he's 0-5 versus Ohio State, and he's 2-4 versus Michigan.
He's 1-6 at home against his two rivals.
That's what it was at home. Right. He's 3-3 against Michigan State, playing and losing to a Michigan State team, as Freddie elucidated so well, that none of us thought had a single chance to win this football.
Well, and the other thing is
that embarrassment against Rutgers.
There's no question Ohio State will always be the number one rival of Michigan, no matter how much people here at Michigan State hate that. But in this rivalry, I think the tide was starting to turn a little bit, okay? Harbaugh had won 2 of the last 3, and had he won this game as expected, he'd be 3 out of 4. And at least in this rivalry, the trend and the D'Antonio hex that he had on Harbaugh for whatever reason was turning, and Michigan State had this new unknown coach. And I live here, guys. I can tell you a week ago there was very much climate here, whether it be silly social media or what, that was Tucker worth this investment? What's the buyout? Chris Solari, the Free Press, was putting up the buyout numbers after 1 year, $27 million. This is true.
Because stranger things have happened. Yeah.
Right. It was like, did we make the wrong hire? And really, they didn't pay $8 million for the guy. If you consider his buyout and D'Antonio's buyout, they paid $14 million to lose to Rutgers. That was the tone here last week.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something else, Eli. If you don't believe me about what's going on with Michigan's pissed off fans, you know what they're doing now out there? If you go on, they're trying to figure out, okay, who can we get to replace Harbaugh? You know, do we need an M man? Should we go someplace else? That's what's going on. And how can Michigan extend this guy's contract? I mean, I guess if Michigan State could win at Ann Arbor Saturday, I guess Michigan could win at Columbus this year. I don't like their chances, but where are they going with this football program? And who would have believed that this would have happened under Harbaugh? You know what, boys? There was one graphic to me that told Jim Harbaugh's tale that Fox put up at the beginning of that game. And that is this: Michigan had 10 guys drafted by the NFL last year, and their record was 9-4. That says underachieving, guys aren't playing, coaches aren't coaching. Don Brown almost made a fool of himself as defensive coordinator on Saturday. Michigan people are not happy about it. And I love Michigan too, even though I went to Michigan State. And I'm not happy about it, except for Saturday's verdict.
I saw Donovan Peoples-Jones caught a touchdown pass and think, my God, these guys played better in the NFL than they did at Michigan.
Yeah, that's true. So true. That's part of the problem, Eli. I don't know.
So let's do this. I have a lot more to say about Michigan and the chances of them ever being good again. But let's go back to the game itself, okay? Let's listen first towards Harbaugh. Harbaugh spewed his standard work harder, get better post-game stuff. Here's Harbaugh and quarterback Joe Milton. Milton asked about if they made halftime adjustments. Adjust to what, he said.
No. I mean, we stuck to our game plan. They didn't do anything different from film. So, you know, we stuck to our game plan. Nothing changed. Just, we got to execute.
Congratulations to Michigan State. But we got to own the loss and come back and find out, you know, where we can improve. You know, where this is a high character team. And, you know, I believe they'll do just that. And each person looking at themselves and player, coach, you know, all of us and you know, strive to be a lot better.
Blah, blah, blah. But, let me move in a different direction. I'll hear what you guys have to say. You know, the Lions, of course, they're the Lions, but an NFL team can get better in a year. Major League Baseball teams, you know, can get better quickly. in the NBA. But it seems to be just like Michigan and Ohio State dominated this conference for 30 years, just about unchallenged. And all the others, Purdue and Iowa, Northwestern, Indiana, Minnesota, Illinois, even Michigan State, they'd have a couple years where they'd move up, but eventually they went back to where they were. I think Michigan is where they are, a second-tier team. And I don't know whether Ohio State's chokehold can ever end. It seems like Wisconsin and Penn State are beyond them. That's why I said, is there a chance for apathy among Michigan fans? How many years do you have to get beat up before you say, you know, I guess we are Indiana?
You already asked that question, and I think I answered it, but you talk about apathy. I'm watching that game, and is there a more exciting moment in sports when Michigan comes out of the locker rooms onto the field for a big game, and all the boys as one jump up and touch the sign, "Go Blue, M Club supports you." Nobody in that stadium.
Yeah, it's really, it's the strangest.
It's so depressing.
I
almost didn't watch.
It's the strangest sight I've seen yet. I've seen empty stadiums.
Yes,
but to see the shot of the big house for the Michigan State game empty was almost. It almost caught me off guard. I wasn't ready to see the big house for Michigan and Michigan State with an empty stadium that holds 112,000 people or whatever it holds. And I'm not throwing a crutch at Michigan. I'm saying, could this game have been different with the crowd? Perhaps. That's not to take away from Michigan State's victory, but I think Eli's point in the beginning that this COVID era is very strange is also very real. And then more to Eli's point about the app. Yeah, I think Ohio State does have a stranglehold on this conference for the next 10 years, because I think Ryan Day is almost as good as Urban Meyer.
He's going to go down, Freddie. He's going to go down with Woody and Urban Meyer.
He's going to be great. And they got it rolling so far there that nobody in the Big Ten can touch them. And I think this is Ohio State's conference for the next 10 years. I really do. And I don't think Michigan State or any of them can catch them.
Yeah, Harbaugh's tortured effort to bring Michigan football back, at least bring it back to where the Lloyd Carr era was. He's got nothing on Rich Rod or Brady Hoke at this point. Michigan football is a slightly above average in the Big Ten, and Paul Christ and James Franklin, Wisconsin and Penn State came in. They appear to be better coaches. You know,
Penn State lost to Indiana, remember, the opening game.
Whatever.
So they're great shakes. And in Michigan, by the way, wouldn't that be something? Michigan has a date at Bloomington this Saturday at noon. Could they lose that game to Indiana?
Sure, they're favored by 3.5 points. When we know what, the whole point spread thing is strictly done to get people to bet an equal amount of money on both teams, and that's why it was 24.5. If they, depending on the emotions of the fans, etc. And Michigan is, by the way, 3.5 point favorites in Indiana this week.
Now, here's my thing. Did you say that on the show on Thursday? Because you listen to Fred and you listen to me and what we're talking about. What we believed, you could have made that point spread 42, and we still would have bet on Michigan.
I wouldn't have, but it was.
I'm kidding. High. You know what I'm saying? But I know. That's how lopsided that was. Yeah. I didn't think there was anything to that 24-point spread at all.
No, because one team played great the first week. The other one was awful, and you make an assumption. That's why the spreads are done as they're done.
There was such an overreaction to both teams' performance on the first day. Michigan State turned the ball over 7 times against a fired-up Rutgers team, and Michigan went in and made Minnesota look unprepared. And Minnesota is, as PJ Flex teams always are, they're a little overrated. He's a little overrated. And Michigan took advantage of it. And then everyone jumped on the wagons against Michigan State and against Michigan. We all overreact. 1 week does not always carry over into the next. That's one thing I learned by when I used to bet and I could never win. Okay, it's why I don't do it anymore.
The losing team plays harder and the winning team tends to let down. It happens automatically.
All right, well, here's one of the things that really bothered me from a Michigan standpoint. If you look at programs like Ohio State's and like Michigan's, they're too deep with high school All-Americans at every single position. And we talked about this coming into this season, and I mentioned it twice, and people knew this, that Michigan was going to have to replace 2 starting cornerbacks. Well, big deal. I mean, you know they're going to have somebody really good. It looked to me like they should have just reached into the Fox studios on Saturday and pulled Charles Woodson back, however old he is, to play. And I ripped Don Brown already in this because they didn't make any adjustments defensively. His State went over the heads of these corners time and again, and they didn't get any help. I don't want to be too critical of Vincent Gray and the other kids that they used, Jalen Perry and so on and so forth, because they're just boys. These aren't 30-year-old professional athletes. But why they didn't pull them out when they were getting beat time and time again, why they didn't make any adjustments,
there's nobody better. That's why it always
happens. Well, they did pull Vincent. They pulled him out, and they finally burned his back up too. But, you know, the Don Brown thing, he's not a kid. He's not a boy. He's making big-time money. Okay, and they always talk on the telecast and the broadcast how he's one of the premier defensive coordinators in the country, and I just don't see it. I haven't seen it for a few years. It's not just about Saturday. I don't know why this guy is the golden boy, and for all the heat Harbaugh takes, maybe the biggest heat he should take is having him as a defensive coordinator at that price tag. I don't get it, guys. I don't get the thrill of Don Brown.
And you know what's going to happen, Freddie? If Harbaugh does return for the final year on this contract, and I'm starting to question that, if they get the hell kicked out of him by Ohio State and maybe even lose another game, I'm starting to question this. Don Brown, at his age, what is he, 65 now, is going to, quote, announce his retirement when the season is over.
Is how awful Michigan is, but let's look at State for a minute. And by the way, I sensed it when that game was over. I happened to be in the car listening to Brandy and Dan Dierdorf. They did not mince
words. I'm sorry I missed that.
They did not mince words. They did not say that this was a shock. They didn't say that what's happened to Michigan. They praised the word. They praised the effort in preparation for Tucker and the Spartans, as saying they outplayed, they outcoached, they outhustled Michigan. They should call it a less than energetic team. They didn't say it was uncharacteristic of Michigan. They treated it as no less than an understandable outcome, which
why did they do that?
Because
they're Michigan homers, and if they're too negative, they might not keep their jobs, Eli. Even Brandy and Dierdorf.
No. But they could have made excuses for Michigan, and they didn't. They made no excuses for Michigan. No, they handled it very.
You thought they would have ripped them, but no.
I'm praising them. Well, yeah, they did. They ripped them by saying Michigan State deserved to win. They played that when you say they played harder and wanted it more. That's saying Michigan State deserved to win. So afterwards, you had Tucker and Lombardi. Tucker looking to a bright future. Lombardi about the Spartans' belief in themselves, not listening to what those odds makers had to say.
I know we're 3-touchdown underdogs, but everybody on this team knew going into the game that we had a chance, and we had a good chance. So that was part of the reason why we played with so much confidence and ended up getting the win. But, you know, Ricky's a player. We got dogs all over the field. I mean, people making plays left and right. So, you know, today was Ricky's day, but, you know, who knows? Tomorrow can be somebody else. We got a bunch of playmakers. You're going to have to cover all of them.
Credit goes to our coaching staff and our players and our preparation and believing in our process. We believe in what we're doing. You know, this is just the beginning, you know, for us.
That's Mel Tucker, and he was deservedly excited. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, I was just going to say Rocky Lombardi surprised me because I didn't think he was terrible in the first week, but I made the brilliant analysis that he can't throw the ball down the field and that his throws are not pinpoint.
What's
and
with that throwing motion, Fred?
You look at that. I mean, I saw Rocky last Sunday. I was doing a delivery. I saw him last Sunday at a Five Guys Burgers and Fries, and I texted all my friends that he fumbled his fries. Okay. But what I'm saying is this guy, you look at that, he made pinpoint Connor Cook-like throws in traffic. He did throw downfield.
He missed a lot of throws in that game, Fred, also.
No,
go crazy the other way now.
I thought his throws were in traffic were pretty tight. I thought he made big plays.
He was good.
I thought he'd do downfield, and I didn't think he could do that. So he proved me wrong on Saturday. And he was very much along with that kid White. A key to this victory, and this kid White came out of nowhere. I'd never heard of the guy. I think he made two catches the first week, right, Bob?
I think it was one or two. And the other thing, though, look, I don't want to, you know, toss water all over this big moment for my alma mater, Michigan State. But one of the other things, besides those turnovers that drove us crazy opening week, was the play calling. And we saw a lot of the same thing, even in the win Saturday at Ann Arbor. How many times on the Fox broadcast did Joel Klatt say, quote, boy, I don't understand that call at all. It happened an awful lot, and I'd like to see them open it up a little bit more than they did, and it's going to be a big test for them at Iowa this week. I think we got to go to a break, Mr. Zerich.
Yeah, they're 6.5-point dogs at Iowa. Yeah, with social distancing, you don't need your reading glasses to see somebody 6 feet away, but you still can't see your phone without those dreaded reading glasses. And that's why so many people, 45 plus like you out there, who have lost their close vision, are getting multifocal lens implants from Dr. Yaldo. Will enable you to see the tiniest of print and also see perfectly at a distance. It is a life-changing procedure. Of course, people under 45 still opt for custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo, the best in the world, and enables them to once and for all throw those annoying contacts and glasses in the garbage for good. All these surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. Get a free evaluation. It doesn't cost a thing to find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. Call 1-800-398-EYES. Go to YaldoWeisCenter.com. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you. You'll get $1,500 off the regular price. And everybody in Michigan knows Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. You buy a Lincoln, the Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln, you find both the buying and service elements to be hassle-free and the best anywhere in Metro Detroit. It's part of why Star Lincoln is Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership, a family business started by the legendary Hoot, the auto giant and philanthropist over 50 years ago. Star gets five-star reviews right and left. People are thrilled with not only the cars, but their experience at Star Lincoln. Drive the Star of American Auto Luxury. Make an appointment at 248-354-4900 or buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Eli, may I say something else, please, right now about Fox's coverage of the game? As you know,
sure.
Our friend, our former guest, my former protege, Gus Johnson, I thought he was very good, and Klatt was very good. My problem comes, they got these guys in the studio. They probably had to learn the names of any player who played for Michigan or Michigan State, with the exception of, well, I mean, they got some Big Ten guys. Urban's there, obviously. But after that shocking, amazing game, you got a field reporter at that game down in the Big House. How come she can't throw a mic in front of Mel Tucker? And I'm waiting to hear, I've got to hear an interview. What are they saying? Now they go to the studio show. And I keep, well, any minute now, they're going to throw it back to Ann Arbor so we can hear an interview. No, they just throw it to the next game coming up right here on Fox. I hated it.
I think that's COVID related, though, Bob. I haven't seen anyone do in person next to interviews, even on the NFL games.
Well, they wear a mask and say six feet apart. They're doing that on the NFL games.
They do it, as you said, 10 feet apart. They have the reporter, Michelle Tafoya, whoever it is in the first row of the stands, and the quarterback's 10 feet out. I mean, you can't just throw a microphone in Mel Tucker's face. That's just not the way it's done right now.
Have a boom mic.
They could. Maybe they just needed to go to the next game. Who knows?
I just thought that was ridiculous. And so many of us wanted to hear, you know, what Tucker had to say.
Well, when Jim Harbaugh was a freshman at Michigan in 1983, the quarterback that he prepped under and played behind was
Steve Smith.
Started for 3 years, and when he ended his Michigan career in 1983, was the leading passer in school history and the total offense leader in school history. And yet, you don't hear a lot about Steve Smith. He never had the legacy that even Wangler, Ricky Leach, Harbaugh, the others had. He really had a remarkable career, but one of the stories behind it was how the disrespect, how he was treated. There's a lot of reasons for that, and Steve's going to be our guest later on. One of my best friends from the Michigan era back then.
We could call Steve Smith the quiet multimillionaire who lives down at the end of the street.
He's done quite well for himself. He had a brief career after Michigan in the CFL and the NFL. Never played in the NFL, but did go to a camp. But he'll have a lot to say about Michigan's running quarterbacks, lack of them over the years, because he was the best. This guy could run the ball.
Was really good.
Hey, Freddie, let me ask you one more question, please. Matt Coughlin hit a great first year, had a bad second year, kicked a couple field goals Saturday, but he missed that 40-yard field goal. You know, that could have been big in that game. What do you think the future is for this kid? Do you trust in him?
He's a good kicker, but he's a little erratic, a little inconsistent.
That's not a good kicker.
Well,
by the way, Matt Prater missed a 40-yarder by about 20 yards.
Yeah, field goal kickers miss kicks. The guy for New Orleans Sunday night missed a chip shot, and they trusted him to kick a 45-yarder to win the game, strangely enough. I mean, kickers do miss kicks. I don't think he's great. I think he's a good college kicker, and that'll be the end of it. But he has shown some tendency to miss big kicks, especially last year. But, as you said, 2 years ago, he was light out. Yeah.
If it doesn't concern you, it concerns me.
Well, I don't lie awake at night thinking about that. I suppose if I was Mel Tucker, I might be a little concerned about it, but I'm not.
I think he's got a pretty good leg. He kicked a 50-yarder yesterday, didn't he? I believe he kicked a 51-yarder yesterday. I thought one of his shortcomings was that he didn't have a lot of distance, but he seems to pick some up over the years. But so let's move on. We can go to talk to the Lions. I mean, the Lions.
No, you know, why don't we move on to what's more important than the latest FL's loss? We'll do that in a little bit. My Lions lament. I want to talk about AJ Hinch, fellas. Sure. Unfortunately, we had recorded this program on Monday morning, and he was hired on Friday. So, boys, take it away. AJ Finch, the new Tigers.
AJ Finch?
AJ Finch. I think it was a no-brainer. He was my number one choice out of the gate. Well, actually, number 1A and 1B were the two alleged cheaters, Hinch and Cora. And it looks like Cora may go back to the Red Sox. I'm surprised the Tigers went out here and hired him. I'm pleased that they did. I thought most of the other candidates did not move the needle at all.
Why were you surprised? Why were you surprised?
I didn't think they would deal with the cheating thing. I didn't think they would pay the money necessary in the dugout. I didn't think Chris Illich would pay that kind of money. Whatever it is, AJ Hinch was a tier above financially all those other candidates. Okay, and I didn't think they'd come up with that money. But I thought
what they come up with. I didn't see the numbers.
I haven't seen it either.
Well, I can tell you. I can promise you, it's a lot more than Lloyd McClendon and all the other candidates that were out there. I think they paid him more money than they would have any of these other candidates. That's my point. And I'm surprised they were willing to deal with the cheating scandal. And I think one of the reasons they did, and Al Avila pointed this out, is he owned up to the cheating thing. He didn't duck from it. He took responsibility for it. He said, I was wrong. He didn't try to make excuses. And he made a vow the day after he was fired and suspended that he was going to make a positive out of this, wherever it was.
All right. Now, it was finally ruled or determined by baseball that Hinch did not actively participate in that plan, just that he didn't do enough to stop it. So he told Rob Manfred's investigators that he was not supportive of the system. He called it, and I quote, wrong and distracting, and he even destroyed the monitor twice, forcing it to be replaced. And you know, the thing I don't understand about this whole Houston sign stealing scandal is the banging on the trash can in the dugout to communicate what pitches were coming. Bang once for a fastball, twice if it's off speed. Didn't anybody on the opposing bench or any of the umpires think or say, excuse me, what the hell are you guys doing? They're always banging on a trash can like that.
They were called hearing it, but by the way, just like Michigan can't get booed off the field because there's no fans in the stands. When the Tigers lose the first 10 games next year, nobody's going to be like banging on a little garbage can cover in the stands to poke fun at Hinch.
Hey, there are people that think the Astros wouldn't have been in the playoffs had there been fans in the stands, because the abuse would have been so brutal and so distracting that not having fans is partly responsible, although they were just a 500 team during the season. Anyway, partly responsible for them going as far as they did.
Let's hear what Hinch is here.
Atticus Finch.
He knows he can't run from it.
Sid Finch.
He knows his best defense isn't to duck or dodge the role he played and the regret he has, and here's what he had to say about
that. That's part of my story and part of my career. It's not a part of the players that I'm going to be managing. And I'm sorry that they're going to have to deal with it and then we're going to have to talk about it, but that is our reality, because wrong is wrong, and it was very wrong, and I'll make sure that everybody knows that I feel responsible because I was the manager and it was on my watch.
See, well, unlike Jim Harbaugh a moment ago, that was the perfect answer, if you ask me.
It was.
I guess it was.
That was the perfect answer.
But Bob and Fred, it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. It's in the past. He's hired. People will ask him. It'll be a question, but it means nothing. Here's what matters. And I'm going to remind you, and Sparky Anderson, the great Sparky Anderson, the Hall of Famer, only man to win a championship in both leagues, blah, blah, blah. He came here in 79. Let's see. In the six-team AL East, he was fifth. In fact, Al Ackerman used to call him fifth place Sparky.
Right.
Fourth before they challenged Baltimore. They finished second in 83. The point is, let me ask you both a question. Who was the building block? Who are the players in the Tigers that are building around? Who are the offensive players that are going to be the linchpin of this team? Name me one of them. Name me one player who has.
Well, it better bleep and be Casey Mize, Eli, because he's said, the number
okay,
one pick
overall. Time out. I said, give me a regular player. Catcher through.
Okay, this kid outfielder, this 19-year-old outfielder, was the number one draft choice.
Ricky Green.
He's done nothing.
Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson.
Riley Green, my fault. Riley Green. Thanks for answering the question. There's nobody. I think your rhetorical question, Eli, is the answer is they don't have one.
Right.
And that was part of my issue when I was on when with Tigers. What is the identity of the Tigers? Is it an aging Miguel Cabrera? Come on. There is no identity of the Tigers. And you look at these other organizations. I think the identity of the Tigers is going to be who they sign in free agency.
Well,
if they get one of these guys.
By the way,
they have an identity. That's the problem.
Their two best players are free agents after 1 year, Crone and Scope. So right. Who are the building blocks? Is it Jacoby Jones? Is it Willie Castro? Who are the guys?
I know what you're saying.
They got nobody.
But you can't say nobody because they're too young and we don't know. Now, Fred had a very interesting segue right there into a topic that I think we have to discuss. And that is this. There's a lot of potential for discord and politics here. It's going to be interesting to see what Hinch thinks of all these young guys that Avila has drafted. What if they disagree? Denny, for instance, already says that the Tigers made a mistake on Casey Mize. He doesn't think he's going to make it. What if Hinch thinks that? Mm-hmm. What about the free agents, sure. Fred? Shouldn't AJ have the ultimate say on whom he wants on this baseball team next year? I don't think Gardy did. And if you read between the lines in his working relationship with Al Avila, you could tell there was discord between the guys he wanted and didn't get, so on and so forth. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah,
I think that's a good point. And I think that we're in an era in baseball where the front office has more of a role than ever. It used to, the old school way was the front office gathered the players. They signed them and you manage them. I sense during the playoffs, this could even be a part of the Kevin Cash decision to pull that pitcher, to pull Snell in that game. I think upper management is now having a say through analytics what managers do on the field. I truly believe that. And can Hinch be his own man and separate himself from making these decisions?
He's already said he will.
Well, he said he will. But the Tigers are very much going to the analytic era. They are very much belief in that. They wouldn't hire a manager who didn't believe in it. I'm not sure, even sure Gardenhire believed in it. But analytics now are such a big part of baseball, much to my chagrin. But I think that management is helping managers make decisions on the field. And can Inch Hint, we keep saying his name wrong. Can AJ Hinch separate himself and be his own man in making these decisions,
including, as you say,
which players to bring in?
I think that's a key point. But I hasten to add, Fred, that analytics is not all a bad thing. You look at these amazing shifts that are constantly going on, and don't you watch the TV and say, my God, he hit the ball right into the shift. That's just a base hit to center field. So it's not the worst thing. And as far as the other thing goes about this sign stealing stuff, we said at the time on the show, Eli, Denny, and I, that sign stealing is a time-honored tradition in baseball. And now here comes former Cy Young winner Jack McDowell on Friday again after we taped Thursday's show. I'm not sure why he came out and did this, but he stepped forward and he accused Tony La Russa, who, as you know, just got at age 76 the White Sox job on Friday. Mm-hmm. He accused La Russa of having a TV camera-aided sign-stealing system installed when Tony managed the White Sox in the late 80s. So I'm giving a big ups to Al Avila for identifying AJ as the guy he wants and calling him 30 minutes after the World Series ended and getting him. I like that.
La Russa was fired in 86 when Jerry Reinsdorf brilliantly made Ken Harrelson the general manager out of the broadcast booth. He fired La Russa, and so I think this La Russa hiring was just Reinsdorf making good after all these years. But let me just say, this is, by the way, Hinch's third managerial experience. He was also hired by the Diamondbacks, replacing Bob Melvin, and he was also fired the following season in 2010 with a 31-48 record. So AJ Hinch is not going to make immediate changes. He's not going to suddenly turn a team that, you ready, lost 98, 114, and at the rate they played ball last year, 98 games if you protracted it out over the course of the season. So you have a 100-loss team, a new manager coming in. They're going to be calling them whatever the like they did like fifth place Sparky for a while. But, yes, hopefully he makes a change over time.
Hey, you know what I would like you to do, Eli, if you haven't done it already, and that would be for this next show coming up here. I think everybody knows that you have a very close relationship with Gibby. Gibby has a very close relationship with A.J. Hinch, the Arizona time. I'd like to know what Kirk Gibson thinks about A.J. Hinch. I mean, kind of off the record, honest kind of stuff.
He will like him. He likes guys that are into analytics. So is Gibby. That's why he liked Brad Ausmus at the time, because he was into analytics, maybe a little bit ahead of it. But we'll see. I haven't talked to Gibby in a while.
And just on that point, Bob, to respond to what you say about hitting into the shift, I get it. But what makes me marvel even more is that hitters cannot hit a ground ball to third base where they'd
tell
hit
me about it. Tell me about it.
I mean, I'm looking, what would George Brett, what would Rod Carew,
Wade Boggs,
the old times,
Wade Boggs,
Nellie Fox. I mean,
these guys would hit 700. I can't believe what when there's Cobb a shift there and they give a left-handed hitter the whole left side of the field.
Amazing.
And they can't hit a ground ball to third base, which would be a double even for a medium runner. But I don't get about the shift in the analytics.
We were so shocked in the World Series when the Dodgers catcher laid down that perfect bunt.
Yeah,
and it was, God, he's a really good bunter. How about telling a guy, just would you bunt to third base, please? And the guy looks around at the manager and says, bunt? I don't know how to do that.
Do
you remember
beyond the butting? Just hit a ground ball to third base and you'll get a double. That's what I don't understand. Hitters are probably better than ever. And I don't know if it's egos. I don't know if it's if it's launch angle. I just believe they can't beat the shift by hitting a ground ball to third base.
It's hard to hit a ground ball when you're concentrated on the launch angle. But would you say that? When I was a kid and a geek, and I would read about old time baseball, and there was a guy named Wee Willie Keeler and his
friend. Hit him where they ain't.
Hey, Bob, why don't you read a couple of spots here? And I want to tell you about an amazing TV feature on baseball that we should all read, but go ahead.
But first, I'm going to tell you folks once again that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer with five locations in Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. In fact, Feldman has nine locations total, and that includes Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. And Feldman has Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, and that's known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. So you buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, then you just relax with their exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. And how about this for an exclusive kicker? They're going to give you guaranteed credit. That's right. We know you can find just what you're looking for at one of Feldman's nine locations. Feldman's massive inventory is unmatched in Metro Detroit. Even Freddie's going to drive down from mid-Michigan and buy a car from him. And you should too up there in mid-Michigan, folks. And don't forget, you can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com with an effortless, hassle-free experience. And Power Home Solar is America's fastest growing solar energy company based right in Metro Detroit. Not only that, every one of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels is made right here in America. With solar energy from Power Home, you're going to save money, help save the environment, and never again suffer a costly and infuriating power outage. For you folks in Michigan, winter's on the way. Partnering with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for all your in-home energy needs. Yeah, you're going to lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages this winter and for good. Power Home even has financing starting at just $99 a month. So you call them at 1-800-POWER-90 and you'll save an additional $2,000. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
I've told you a bunch how I think a really great sports journalism show is Real Sports. I'm not a big Brian Gumbel fan.
He's a good guy. I like Brian personally. Okay.
He's always come off.
People don't like him. I know.
He appears to be a bit pompous, but Real Sports just does some really great investigative stuff. And they have
best there is.
It is, Freddie. I'm glad you agree. They have one this month on Negro League baseball. Mm-hmm. Where a guy researched, he went back, he's devoted his life to this, old newspaper clippings. He put together the statistical record on the Negro Leagues that hadn't really existed. And his point is that the Negro League players were actually better, equal to, if not better, than the major leaguers. What's some of his evidence? Well, let's see. In the 1950s and 60s, when the Negro Leagues were breaking down, all the MVPs are former Negro League players. Roy Campanella, three MVPs, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron. They had the best players. And it's fascinating to see this because you always pictured it as kind of a poorly run, you know, backwater type of league. Not the case at all. A lot of black guys played baseball when they went to the and the biggest mistake the Major League Baseball made, they should have hired Jackie Robinson 20 years earlier. America would have accepted. The game would be better. The statistical record
wasn't old enough.
Huh?
He wasn't old enough.
But Cool Papa Bell was, and the others were also.
Josh Gibson.
Feature. Just right. A great feature that I invite
yeah.
people to
Yeah, see. You know what, Eli? Thanks for mentioning that, because I'm going to see that now. I didn't know about that. I interviewed, among others, but just one big name, Bob Feller, a number of times. And I asked Feller, how could you guys do this? How could you play Major League Baseball without going to the owners as human beings and saying, these guys are every bit as good as we are? How come they can't play Major League Baseball with us? And you know what Feller told me? I quote now, I made the colored ball player a lot of money. I took Satchel Paige with me on barnstorming mm-hmm. tours in the offseason, and I made the colored ball players a lot of money. Disgraceful. Disgraceful.
Well, what's disgraceful that they weren't into that Bob Feller didn't speak up?
Nicklaus should have spoken up all those years, too, for all the black golfers and Palmer and those guys. But no they doubt. Didn't.
Very hard to be a revolutionary in any way when your salary right. depends on it and they can cut you in a minute. And
it's a lot easier said than done, Bob. It's a lot easier said than done. But I
but a guy with a lot of power like a Jack Nicklaus or a Bob Feller could have done it, I think.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, I don't disagree with that.
We need to at least make mention of the Lions. Who?
Well, it's funny you're going to say that, Eli, because this was not an intended transition. But you brought up the real sports thing, and we've been through the Michigan State angle from everything.
Okay, Freddie, hold it. My turn now.
Yeah.
Because I'm here to tell you, Mr. Human, that you know the Lions could have won that game on Sunday.
Well, wait.
And when you think about it, they probably should have won that game. They would have won that game.
Shut up, Bob. Let him talk.
No, let me do my Lions lament.
You can in a minute. Just let me. And this was not an intended segue to talk about the Lions, but I'm sitting here because I'm a fill-in in this show. And here we're doing a show that's taped in Detroit. We're an hour into the show. It's as we tape this, it's a day after the Lions game.
Right.
I can't think of another NFL city where the Lions would not at least be in the first 15 minutes of a show than in Detroit
and
in
Michigan.
Team,
right.
Yeah, NFL team. So I can't imagine any other team that's like that. There probably are a few, like in Jacksonville and whatnot. And I'm thinking to myself, is this how far we've fallen? Mm-hmm. Is this where the apathy has gone, where the Lions just lost a game and 24 hours later, we're still not even talking about it until the third segment. What does that tell you about where the Lions are in our landscape?
Listen, they're not bad enough to throw tomatoes at, but they're not to be taken seriously. They're not the worst team in the league. They're maybe a playoff contender in the outside, but nothing special, nothing to believe in, nothing to get excited about. And no one believes that they're going to be that good this year. No one thinks they're going to win a playoff game.
Denny said they're going to the playoffs. Denny wasn't the
only one. Well, it's possible.
You talk about overreaction. People said this was a chance for a third in a row. They beat Jacksonville and Atlanta.
Right.
Then they went up against not a great team, but a decent team in Indianapolis and got beat by 20 at home. Mm-hmm. That's where they are in this Matt Patricia era.
You know what sums it up, Fred? I don't know if you heard the show a week ago today, where Eli, you believe it or not, our buddy Eli was starting to give me a lot of feces because I referred to them as the FLs, as I always do, even after their win over a big and tough Atlanta Falcons team. So listener C. Michael Raymond tweeted, Bob, don't stop calling them the FLs, even if they do go 7-3, as Eli suggested. It'll serve as a reminder to all of us that they will eventually break our hearts. And that's what it is with this team.
They couldn't go 7-3 in the Big Ten.
Not
they don't have
now.
Enough talent, and they're poorly coached.
Well, it's a schedule so weak, though. Their schedule's really weak. They can still come back.
They're still going to lose. They've still got 6 or 7 losses in that schedule.
Here's the stat in the game.
Rushed
13 times for 29 yards, but take out the 10-yard scramble
by Stafford.
Take out Jamal Agnew on an 11 yards reverse. So Adrian Peterson and DeAndre Swift, 11 carries, 8 yards.
It's stunning.
That's the rushing game.
It's just stunning. And Patricia, I know I'm always beating a dead horse, but he's supposed to be this defensive guru when they give up 41 to Indianapolis. I mean, what the appeal of this
guy is? 38-year-old quarterback.
But wait a minute. Seven of them were a pick six. Stafford did get stripped.
You're right. Their defense didn't give up 41, but their defense is soft. It's not dominating. And even if you had to back this coach, you could at least say, supposedly, that he has a defensive edge. He doesn't have any defensive edge. He has no edge. And they're going to lose to teams that are decent. That's just what it is. Mm-hmm. They're going to beat bad teams. And I just can't believe the mediocrity. Every time we talk about the Lions, I feel like we should fling up the 1967 show we did.
The thing about the EFLs is it's the modus operandi, which never changes. So they get up 7-0 on Sunday. Now it's a 7-7 game. Indy's got the ball with its 38-year-old quarterback who shredded them. So it's a third down situation. As Bob Reynolds used to say on the Lions games, Sacramento, baby! And Indy's pushed, and Cindy, Indy is pushed out of field goal
range. Danny Shelton.
Tweet Sacarino. Danny Shelton unnecessary. That's what he always said. Sacarino. You don't remember that, Reynolds?
Sacarino. I do remember that.
Right. So anyway, so that is Danny Shelton's costly penalty. It's always a costly penalty. It's always something that gives Indy another chance, and they go in, they score a touchdown, and that puts them ahead 14-7. I mean, look, yesterday I almost went to a sports bar here in South Florida so I could see side to side the loser Lions and the loser New York Jets. I never miss a Jets game. I stayed home instead. So I wanted to see Tua's debut with the Dolphins, and I wanted to match. I want to see the game of the week, and what a game it was. Did you guys see that? The Pittsburgh Baltimore game?
I saw the end of it.
Steelers won 28-24. They're 7-0. The Ravens are 5-2. And folks, after you're finished choking on your turkey, as always, from the Lions' turkey of a game on Thanksgiving, they're playing again Thanksgiving night. And so it was just a tremendous football game, back and forth. Reigning MVP Baltimore quarterback Lamar Jackson almost pulled it out. He was terrific. Roethlisberger was good. And an interesting point, do you know that in 17 years, with all the success Ben Roethlisberger has had with the Pittsburgh Steelers, he has never gotten one single vote for league MVP? Interesting.
I didn't know that.
And but the thing I didn't like hyping the game is I understand why they hype games, but the big comment was there's no bigger rivalry in sports than the Steelers versus the Ravens. Really? Really? Michigan, Ohio State, Duke, Carolina, so Yankees, Red Sox.
I am adopting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as I said on the last show. I was never a big
Brady. You better not. They're playing the Giants tonight, damn it. Your Giants and my Giants.
They're not my Giants anymore. I could care less about the Giants, even though I watched them growing up. I'm that far removed from them. But they're going to move to 6-2, and Brady has a better team in Tampa than he had in New England. I said I wasn't a huge Brady fan because everybody was so gaga about him. But his greatness is undisputed. But he had those three gift Super Bowls, the one where the Falcons choked it away, the one where Darrell Bevell made the ridiculous call. So there's that. But look what he's got now. He's got great. He didn't have great receivers in New England. He had Edelman, and he's had Chris Hogan.
Wes Welker's pretty good.
Little white guy, little short little white guys. He's got Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. He's got Gronk. Now he's got Antonio Brown. He's got a great coach. Maybe the equal of Belichick of anybody. And I just think it's exciting. And I want to see him clobber the Giants today. And Tom Brady at 43 is a better story now, I think, than he's been the last, 5, 6, 7 years with New England. So,
yeah, and you think about this. I mentioned this on a previous show. I'm going to start with this number combination because it's the most famous number combination. Think about this in the history of Michigan sports. And that number combination is 35-5. As we all know, what the Tigers did to start the 84 season en route to the World Series. Bill Belichick, 35-5 career versus Buffalo until yesterday when he lost fourth straight game. New England has lost. Cam Newton fumbled in position for the game-tying field goal in the final seconds. How bad has he been? And the Buffalo Bills win the game. And he, again, how else can you interpret this, boys? We're seeing right now what the real reason for that amazing New England success was. It was a lot more Tom Brady than it was.
Well, listen, they're in a rebuilding mode. That's one reason Brady left, because they didn't have the players anymore. And you could tell in recent years he made a smart move. He went to a team with better players, and a coach.
The implication was they wanted him out. They felt he was old and it was time to start over.
Well, then they were wrong.
Looks like it, doesn't it?
Interesting. So, by the way, now you got the line. So, in terms of next week's game, you got the Lions with 11 yards rushing from their two top rushers. Dalvin Cook at 163. Is Minnesota for real? And should the Lions?
By the way, Eli, Dalvin Cook scored four touchdowns Sunday.
Four touchdowns.
The Lions
got 11 yards rushing. He had four touchdowns and 223 total yards.
And after paying $150 gazillion for former Michigan State star Kirk Cousins, it looks like they've gone back to, you know, realizing, hey, maybe this guy isn't all he was cracked up to be. Let's be more conservative. Yeah.
Only threw 14 passes the whole day.
Yeah, with a guy with a quarterback like that making that kind of money, and he throws 14 passes. So the Vikings host Detroit next Sunday, and it's really a must-win game for both teams if they're entertaining any thoughts about getting a playoff.
That's right. You know why? Because this division is wide open. The Packers are vulnerable. Minnesota's not very good. The Bears suck. And so the Lions, it's just waiting for you to take it, boys. Anyway,
they will not win that game at Minnesota.
I don't know, but that's what we said about Michigan State. Michigan State at Ann Arbor.
I won't go impossible, but it will not happen.
I agree with you on that.
Hey, you know, Fred, one of the things I like to ask you about, because I've been gone from Michigan so long, and you've been a prominent sports commentator Detroit.
Before you finish, it's time
Brandon needs a break. I think we need to say goodbye to Toledo, right?
You got to say goodbye to Toledo. Thank you.
And then I'm going to ask Fred my question.
Okay.
Watching us and listening to us in WCWA, you've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Okay. So, because I've never met him before, and I know that you know him extremely well, tremendous pressure with Kirk Cousins getting this contract in Minnesota, tremendous dissatisfaction on the part of the fans. What's Kirk Cousins like as a person?
You know, it's funny you say that, because I almost interrupted you a minute ago. In my career, which has been fairly mediocre, but in my career, of all of the people I've associated with an interview, he is by far top five. I mean, there's no question. He is one of the.
What do you mean by that?
Well, he's one of the nicest people. He's one of the most intelligent people. He gives thought-provoking answers. One of the few players in my 20 years here who always called me by my first name, got to know me. I remember walking around Pasadena at the Rose Bowl, and he's walking around with his then fiance, who's now his wife, and I'm walking the other way, and he stops me in the middle of the street to introduce me to his fiance. This is Kirk Cousins. I mean, this is the kind of person he is. So I root greatly for his success, and I understand the scrutiny on his game, because he's not a top tier quarterback, and he's making a ton of money, but that's not his fault. They paid him that, but to answer your question, he is, I say top five, he's probably top two of all people I've ever associated with in my 38 years of covering sports.
Nice. Wow. And,
tremendous person.
One of them at the top of my list, Steve Smith, is coming up soon. We're also going to do the mailbag and also this day in sports. I want to remind you, mortgage rates still at all-time lows. If your current mortgage is above 3%, Hall Financial asks the simple question, what are you waiting for? You could be saving money. And currently at Hall Financial, almost 70% of all loans don't require an appraisal. Call Hall Financial today, see if you qualify for a no appraisal loan. If for some reason your loan does require an appraisal for the month of November only, Hall will pay for it for you up to $500. Remarkably, closing times have sped up again. Right now, the majority of loans at Hall Financial close in 10 business days or fewer. Just go to our No Filter Sports website, click on the Hall Financial link to get started. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. And let Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies help you plan for your future family obligations. Maybe some of that money you saved at Hall Financial, you can apply to your retirement. And let Luke's track record of success, decades of experience, enable him to create a custom solution for you or your business. Call Luke at 248-663-4748. Get that complimentary consultation. And then if you're comfortable, let Luke do his thing. Lay out a plan that fits your needs. Totally ethical, very knowledgeable and caring. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, 248-663-4748. Advisory service offered through Royal Alliance Associates. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. And, you know, when we do this day in sports, rarely do I go off the big four, you know, maybe an Olympic thing or something like that. But I'm going to talk horse racing, because it was on this day in 1938.
You're going to talk what?
horse racing. This was the day in 1938 that Seabiscuit, in one of the most anticipated contests in horse racing history, he was the top, beat the top money winner in 1937, the favored War Admiral, who had won the Triple Crown. And this, it was the legend of Seabiscuit after that, an undersized horse. They had no analytics back then. So Seabiscuit looked small, didn't look fast, didn't look pretty, and they thought he wasn't that good, but he beat all the odds. And, of course, movies and books and all that. Jacques Plante was the first to wear a protective face mask on this day in 1959. Like we said about the Cy Young, we did that earlier with Denny McClain winning on this day, and the fact Koufax won it on this day, the last year that they only gave out one award. Gordie Howe picked up his 19th and final hat trick on this day. He was 41 years old, the oldest player to ever record a hat trick. He did it against the Penguins.
Let me ask you a question, by the way, about this. We always talk about the Gordie Howe hat trick goal, assist in a fight. You know how many? You know how many Gord had in his career?
Fights or hat tricks?
A Gordie Howe hat trick.
A Gordie Howe hat trick.
I don't know.
One goal, a goal, assist in a fight in one game. You know how many he had? I've read that he had one.
One? I was going to say
one. In his career. I've read that.
Yeah. That's funny.
Mark Messier played his 1,616th game. Rangers lost to the Blues. That put him in second place all time behind Gordie Howe. But guess what? I looked up the list of the top 10. The top seven of the top 21 are wings in most games played. Howe, Chelios, Murphy, Lindstrom, Alex Delvecchio, Shannon, Eiserman, the 21st and the number 21. So interesting that seven of the top 21 in games played were Red Wings.
Bob, I thought you told me Eli doesn't like hockey. He's all over it.
I like stats.
You know, what it is? I don't think Eli Zara dislikes hockey.
Oh, I don't dislike
I think he just doesn't think it's very important. And I really disagree with that. And he doesn't think it's important.
Here's another one. Anymore. Mike Ilitch and Joe Vucked into the Hall of Fame on this day in 2003. You see, there's more. And Kobe Bryant, youngest player to make his NBA debut on this day in 1996. He was 18 years 2 months old. And how fast do they tumble? This was the day in 2013 that Nick Foles became the seventh passer in history to throw seven touchdown passes. And last night, when the Bears were playing in Troy, it must have said three or four times, hey, Mike Nagy's got to think about replacing this guy.
But Trubisky. Yeah, now they're talking about bringing Trubisky back. That's right.
Well, I think some people know that Nick Foles started at Michigan State. I love to have Fred Heumann here to talk about this stuff. Fred, did you know him? And what was the
big deal? I didn't know him. I remember he couldn't beat out Kirk Cousins. And
yeah,
so
that was what it was.
To Arizona. Yeah, there were like three or four good quarterbacks there. I think Hoyer was in the mix at the time, too, but he couldn't beat those guys out, particularly Cousins, so he transferred.
Yeah.
Last one. 1926, Ty Cobb resigns as Tigers manager, replaced by who? Get this right, I'll give you each $100.
What year was that again? Huey Jennings.
Yeah, I was going to say Huey Jennings.
George Moriarty.
Wow.
No, I wouldn't have gotten that.
Ever to hold MLB's four principal jobs, player, umpire, scout, and manager.
Is that right?
That's pretty cool. In sports. Go ahead.
Well, we mentioned Michigan State. We have to mention Herb Adderley's death. I mean, he was 81, but one of the greatest players in Michigan State history, and of course, a member of the Vince Lombardi Packers. A couple other national deaths, just briefly. I want to mention Billy Tubbs, the four-time Big 8 basketball coach of the year at Oklahoma for Eli Zarrett, because this is Eli's all-time hero. Freddie, I don't know if you know this about Eli, but he is Mr. Golf. Lives, eats, breathes,
sleeps. I do. I've played Billy with him.
Billy Tubbs was not only an active golfer, he had two holes in one in his career, and his most recent one came at the age of 83.
How many do you have, Eli?
Oklahoma. Zero.
None?
Zero.
Denny says he has zero, too.
Yeah. Oh. They're hard. No. Gotta be lucky.
Funny about that. And also, this is a name I know a lot of you people don't know, but I really want to mention this. Longtime Michigan small college and junior college basketball coach Glenn Donahue died over the weekend in suburban Detroit. He was 85. Now, Glenn Donahue ranks second behind Rochester College's Garth Pleasant in all-time wins in the history of the state of Michigan. Career coaching record, 656 and 451, and third on that list. And I apologize for never having him on, and we really have to. And that would be Greg Campy, who's done such a fantastic job at Oakland University all these
years.
One of
my favorite people also, Greg
Campy. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right. Greg, if you're listening, buddy, we're going to get to you. Don't you worry.
Let's bang out the mailbag. Go ahead.
Here we go, folks. You can tweet us at UncleFred6. That's what he goes by, at Bob Page Sports. And Eli might get back to Twitter, at Eli Zara someday. Well, a lot of comments in the mailbag this week, obviously, on the Todd Stottlemyre interview. And one of the things, if folks, if you haven't heard Todd Stottlemyre, I don't care if you roll through the rest of the show.
You're going to be motivated. You're going to want to go out there and seize the day if you listen to Todd Stottlemyre.
Yeah, and the thing also is Todd talked a lot about losses in all of our lives. And as you all know, Denny and Eli tragically both have lost daughters. Todd felt guilty and he blamed himself for the death of his 15-year-old brother for years until he overcame it. The next day, I got this personal email from one of my best friends, Bob Sherwood, whose beloved wife, Cynthia, and my friend died within the last year or so. And Bob wrote, "I just finished listening to Todd Stottlemyre. Wow. The first third was, as usual, very entertaining, great banter among you guys. But then came Todd, and the level rose to a different level. So true and so moving what he said. Thank you, guys. You made my night." Brian Fusen says, "Todd Stottlemyre is without a doubt the most passionate interview I have ever heard on this podcast. I appreciate that you guys just let him go and share his heart with him. One of the many reasons why I love No Filter Sports Podcast. D Champ," boy, Brandon and I really got into it last show. That was fun. I enjoyed it. I love Brandon. You know that. D Champ Green writes, and the green means he's a big Michigan State supporter, "I love the passion surrounding your Walmart Wolverine discussion. For the record, a Walmart Wolverine generally exhibits other characteristics besides not having a UM degree. Being fair-minded, though, this is not enough reason just to dub somebody a Walmart. But Kurt Kosmowski said, 'Bob, you couldn't be more correct about Walmart Wolverines. The trend for folks all over Michigan to root for UM started in the early 70s. As Bowl led UM to success in the Big Two Little Eight era, it became easy, low risk, and ego and self-image satisfying in such a weird, insecure way to be a UM fan, even though you didn't go there. In contrast that," he says, I guess he's a State fan, obviously, "with being a dedicated MSU fan and enduring everything that they have had to put up with all these years. The UM thing is passed down to future generations who, by example, since 2004, don't acknowledge that Michigan is at best just a top 15 to 25-ish team annually. Rick R., Brandon was right, Bob. You are technically a New York Giant Walmart by your own definition." Now, we're talking about who's doing the shows. There's been a lot of controversy about this. Yes, controversy. Tom Bell writes and says, "Please just admit it. This show is flat without Eli Zarrett on it. But I will continue to listen and donate whenever I can." And Tom is not alone in missing Eli Zarrett when he takes off, as he does now occasionally. Jeff Keller down in Statesville, North Carolina, really likes Eli on the show and really does not like it when I host. He says, "Eli, I certainly understand and appreciate your wanting and needing to take a day off, but I do hope you understand your vital role in the show.
Stop it.
Like traffic cops to Bob's incessant desire to dominate the show."
Well,
what am I supposed to stop, Eli? You want to do the mailbag or not?
I don't want.
They're complimenting you, Eli. Can you take a compliment?
Trying to arouse guilt. I'm not feeling guilty.
Then let him go on. I'll let's put it this way. Jeff, you wrote a very long letter ripping me to shreds, and actually, I can't get into all of it here, and I understand some people don't like me, but I did love your, and I like you. I love your final line. "Finally, Bob, in the early part of episode number 188, when you asked, 'Does John Smoltz get paid by the word?' Well, if that ain't the pot calling the kettle black, I don't know what is. Love the show, including you too, Bob. I just think you need to check your grandiosity at the door before coming on."
Amen to that, brother. Now, that's a good concluding mailbag one.
"Yours affectionately." He signs it, "Yours affectionately." Jeff, brother, all I got to say is after 46 plus years in broadcasting, I'm now going to change my personality just for you. Can I read one from a woman listener, Eli? You're not getting too uptight, are you? We love our women listeners. Denise Patton writes, "Fantastic to have a local sports program that talks about other sports besides the loser Lions. The local sports talk radio shows in Detroit are pathetic compared to your show. If one was to play a drinking game where you had to do a shot every time you heard the name Matthew Stafford, they'd be drunk within the first 20 minutes. You guys keep on keeping on." How about this one, Eli? Because you like this. And then Kurt writes, your show is a welcome respite from the pandemic-ridden world that has altered all our lives. And we just discussed this, the three of us. He says, I noted that Bob mentioned Oscar Gamble last week, and it brought back a lot of memories. I played for Oscar's cousin in summer travel ball during high school. Mr. Gamble was kind enough to sponsor our team. I was honored to meet him and was grateful.
Are we talking about relatives of Oscar Gamble now? How far are we going to
talking about Oscar Gamble sponsoring the guy's team, Eli. I don't know if Eli's, you know, has to go to the bathroom today.
No, because I get people writing me and say, why do you let Bob talk 10 minutes uninterrupted? So you've taken the mailbag and you just go. It's got to be a little tighter. Got to be a little tighter, in my view.
This sounds like the days I was in the sports office at Channel 2 when Eli was telling me, tighten that soundbite. It's 31 seconds and 17 seconds of it are rubbish.
And you know what you said later on? I was right. You didn't need all that word
economy. I learned word economy. If
there
nothing
you
else
go.
From Eli. Thank we'll you to this day. I teach 46. It to young people now.
So in other words, Freddie, with respect to the mailbag, Eli talks the talk, but doesn't or didn't walk the walk. Is that what you're saying, Freddie?
No, he taught me a lot about that. And I was stubborn about it, but I actually learned, and I teach young people now about word economy. Mm-hmm. I tell them Eli Zarrett stories all the time.
Hey, Eli,
say, who is that?
Eli, assuage any difficulties you have with the mailbag, why don't we do even one? Like, I'll do a letter, you do a letter, I'll do a letter, you do a letter.
That's
you
not
do that?
A better idea. That way, after two letters. Yeah. Reach will be done.
Is this segment over yet?
Yeah, it's over right now, and Eli has wounded my feelings immeasurably and irreparably.
Let's hope that there's at least one or two people left to listen to our eat feet.
Well, they better be, because Steve Smith's great.
When Michigan cornerback Steve Smith finished his career after the 83 season, he became the Wolverines' all-time leading passer and total offense leader, meaning the most career passing and rushing yards combined of any quarterback or any player in Michigan history. He'd thrown for 42 touchdowns and run for 31. Even to this day, Steve Smith remains fifth in school history in total offense behind the all-time leader Denard Robinson. His Michigan legacy is complex, and because of it, he isn't a household name despite his statistical achievements.
And Smith with a long snap count, calling the signal. Audible, no question. And back goes Smith. He runs the draw straight up the middle. He's got all kinds of room. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Steve Smith on the quarterback draw. 42 yards. And Michigan goes ahead for the first time in the ballgame. Unbelievable.
Now, that was a quarterback draw against Illinois back in 81, Steve's first season as a starter. Michigan trailed 21-7 in that game and then scored the final 63 points to win 70-21. That was a different era. Please understand that. And Steve joins us now. Remember that game, Steve? Tell us about it.
Oh, I remember that, and I remember the play very well. It's if people go back and look at it, it's on YouTube, and it was a play that Gary Moeller put in an audible, and you can watch the back split. So that's why the audible took so long. The back split, you watch the linebackers run out and take them. They double up on the wide receivers, which that's why it left a big hole right up the middle.
I remember seeing you at Grand Blanc High School doing that stuff. Remember those days?
Yeah, that was all by accident in high school.
Eli just mentioned those big figures, Smitty, 63 and 73. I thought that's what you guys were going to score on Saturday against Michigan State. What the hell is going on with Michigan football? What happened in that game?
I asked somebody, and this is what I got back.
Well, you know what, Smitty? I went to Michigan State, and look what I got. I got one of the old man, and Mason blew up on my shelf here in my den.
Okay, explain what you mean by that, Steve, that Bo Schembechler was gone. And now, by the way, Jim Harbaugh was your backup as a freshman when you were a senior. You kind of brought him along. Tell us about Harbaugh back
then.
Well,
let him answer the question about what happened Saturday.
Okay, answer. Go ahead, do both.
Yeah, I have no idea what happened Saturday. I wasn't anticipating that. I was looking forward to being on this today, not having a completely different kind of conversation. I don't know what happened. You know, it's 2020. It's the weirdest crap going on right now, and unexplainable. You know, Michigan didn't play well. They got a lot of penalties, and obviously a lot of these deep ball penalties just destroyed them. You know, I don't know what happened. I mean, for a team to be favored by 24 and get beat is, you know, you hope you squeeze one of these things out. But
let me follow up on what Smitty did. Okay, you were holding up your statue of Bo, and I have one too in my den. That's what we were laughing about.
I have two of them.
Of Bo, and Freddie went to Central Michigan. So is this what it's all about? Like, the bowl era of Michigan football and that kind of success in Ann Arbor is over? And it's not going to be the same ever again?
No, I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, we're in a different era of football. I mean, you know, I look at the way the game's played. It's played completely different than it was years ago. I'm not sure that the bowl era of football would have been successful today because it was a run-oriented offense that, you know, we didn't throw the ball a lot and we weren't very complex in our passing games back then. So, you know, the way offenses have gotten and the way defenses have played and the bigger, the faster the guys. I mean, listen, you're looking at quarterbacks that are 6'5", 250 pounds, 40-something pounds. I mean, it's just a different era of football. So I don't necessarily think that they can't be successful today by any stretch of the imagination. It's just, you know, things have got to go the right way. And, you know, you watch it with LSU last year where they go undefeated and look at the way they struggle this year. It's just a weird dynamic that happens in today's football.
So still, Steve, tell us what happens to a former Michigan quarterback, a proud Michigan alum, in the last couple of days since Michigan State won that game. Do you still hear from Spartan enemies? Do you still hear from old Michigan teammates saying, can you believe what happened? I mean, how much of that happens in your life when something like that happens?
Well, yeah, I mean, less and less as I get older, but I still hear from people. You know, I got a handful of phone calls after the game, and they're like, what's happening, Steve? And I'm like, I have no idea. I mean, obviously, I'm not in touch with what goes on. You're not involved in play calling. You're not involved in anything. So it's, you know, I'm like everybody. I'm just a fan watching the game, wondering, you know, how we go from being favored by 24 to not playing very well and losing the game.
Are you angry? Would you like to see a change in Michigan football? Harbaugh out.
No, not necessarily. I'm not angry at all. I mean, I'm 58 years old and I'm just a fan and I want to see Michigan win. And, you know, I think they will win again. You know, certain teams are riding high right now and hopefully it'll change soon. I mean, I'd like to see us win just because it's a lot more fun.
So let's go back. The guys rightly interrupted me when I was talking about Harbaugh because I'm glad you were able to say the things you said about this game. But let's talk about him. He played behind you. He was a freshman. You were a senior. I look up to you. I'm sure he admired you in many ways, and you probably helped him in some ways. What's the arc of your relationship with him from back then to what you see today? Do you still talk to him, and how do you assess what's going on?
No, I don't talk to him anymore. He was actually there for a couple of years, his freshman, sophomore year, or my junior, senior year. So I knew him fairly well, you know, but the same thing, you know, I was an upperclassman. And so we didn't talk a whole lot. We talked in the locker room and things like that. We didn't really hang around together. You know, I think he's done a good job of bringing Michigan football back. I think Michigan football was struggling mightily, through the era of Brady Hoke and Rodriguez and these guys. So he's brought it back. We just can't seem to win these specific games that kind of are the most meaningful right now. You know, I like what he's done in a lot of ways. So
why can't they beat Ohio State, Steve?
Ohio State's riding high with a lot of talent right now. They're getting big recruiting classes. They're, you know, they got a lot of talent. They keep replacing talent with talent. And, you know, and listen, it'll flip at some point. You know, it always does. And you know, people will be like they were when I can't think of the guys, Cooper, whoever it was, the coach that was there, that
John Cooper,
Michigan. So
yeah, John Cooper.
Yeah, John Cooper. It'll all come back.
You know, Fred Heumann said on this very show before you came on with us that Ryan Day is going to dominate this series for the next 10 years. What makes you think he's not?
Well, he won't have the same players for the next 10 years. So if he keeps getting top recruiting classes, I guess potentially could. But, you know, players change. It takes a handful of dynamic players and a handful of calls that can change things overnight. So hopefully from my perspective as a fan, that's what I'll get a chance to see.
Long as we're being nostalgic here a little bit, Steve, I wasn't joking about your career at Grand Blanc. It was unbelievable. So you were a top recruit all over the state and you got a Bo bobblehead. So tell us what it's like to have the old man come into your living room and say, I want you to go to Michigan. What was that like?
It was awesome. He was an interesting guy. I think the funny part about it was, is that I had, at one point in time, I had Bill Carr come in, Bill McCartney came in. And at that particular time, I wasn't that interested in going to Michigan. And then I had Lloyd Carr call and I told him I wasn't that interested in going to Michigan. And then that's when Bo came knocking at the door. And, you know,
where were you interested in going? Where were you thinking of going before he came over?
Michigan State.
No, I was really leaning towards Tennessee. At the time, Tennessee was recruiting me very, real heavily. They ran a different kind of offense. They had a three-man spread offense that was really appealing to a young guy. We threw the ball out in high school. Unlike the era back then, everybody throws the ball today like crazy, so you don't think much of people throwing the ball all over the place. But we threw a lot in high school, so there was a lot of appeal of Tennessee with running three spread wideouts and just a different game back then.
So finish that thought. Now you've already told two assistants you have no interest in Michigan. What happens when the old man knocks on the door? Why did it change?
Well, I ended up going there.
Well, what did he do? What did he say?
What did he do?
Well, was it your mom that he wooed, or was it you that he wooed?
No, he wooed me. You know, he had one hell of a presence, and it's just hard to, every time I told him, tried to intimate that I wasn't interested, he assured me that I was a Michigan man. So,
you're not going to Tennessee, right?
Right. He wasn't the easiest guy in the world to play for sometimes, was he, Smitty? Tell us about that, and tell us about what life lessons you learned from Bo Schembechler.
So I've had these kind of conversations before. I think the life lessons are probably the most important piece, right? So, and I can kind of tell you how it was for my career as I got out of football. Football was, it's a short-lived career anyway. And for me, it was a very short-lived career. But what he taught me was, I still laugh when I went into orthopedic sales in my life, and I would think that I was going to be late for a meeting, and I would look down and I'd be going 95 miles an hour because I wasn't going to be late for a meeting. Because we were taught you were never late for meetings. So, you were always there 5-10 minutes early, sometimes earlier than that. I mean, the dedication to detail, I think that's what he was all about. I always say, you look back at what Bo was, and Bo was, he was family first, school second, football third. And he was consistent with that. And it didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter whether you're starting quarterback, you were a walk-on kicker. That's who he was, and that's what he was all about.
When you began as a sophomore, as the starting quarterback, Michigan the year before under Wangler and with Bo had won the Rose Bowl. We've had Stanley Edwards and I can't think of who else, but Butch Wolfolk on this team saying that 1980 team or playing the 81 Rose Bowl was the best ever, better than the 97 championship team. So you come in, you lose the first game at Wisconsin, and for the next couple of years, no matter what you did, it seemed like you couldn't live up to the expectations that people had. I want you to listen here to a set episode from Michigan Replay in 83 with Brandstatter and Bo defending you and lamenting the way you'd been treated by fans and media. Listen.
Number 16 has had to weather a stormy career. He's heard boos from the Michigan faithful and questions from the media, despite numerous career records. It hasn't been easy for the kid from Grand Blanc.
Well, I can go back where they had criticism of every great one we've had. And it's usually by people who are not knowledgeable in the game of football. So what makes the difference? If you think that he is not a quarterback to be reckoned with, then you talk to the defensive coordinators that have to defense him. Because I'll guarantee you, with that speed and ability to run, and when his arm is healthy, there's no better one around.
You were 26-10, 22-6 in the Big Ten. You played in the Rose Bowl. You beat Ohio State at least one out of three times. Why do you think, unlike Rick Leach and Wangler, you had such a troubled legacy despite what you accomplished at Michigan?
Well, I mean, who knows? First thing is that what people don't remember so much, other than the people that are from our era, is that when we went into play Wisconsin my sophomore year, first game I started, we were ranked number one in the country.
Right.
So, I mean, when you're ranked number one in the country and you go out and you throw four interceptions, that's not a good thing. And if I were a fan sitting watching TV and I were a Michigan fan, I probably would have been yelling at the TV saying, replace that guy. So I think that's the first and foremost, in kind of where things move from there is that we came back and played Notre Dame the second game and they were ranked number one in the country and we beat them 25-7. But so people forget about these types of things, right? So the career was up and down. There was some games that were won. There were some games that were lost. And, it's one of those things that had we have not, people don't realize Wisconsin had a really good team my sophomore year and prior years before that. It was kind of like, oh, you go into Wisconsin, you're going to beat Wisconsin. Well, as it turns out, Wisconsin had a really good football team. And we got outplayed. I mean, I didn't play well. We got outplayed in general. And I think it set a stage for me that was very difficult to ever recover from.
Dave, you played in three bowl games. You played in a Blue Bonnet Bowl. You played in the Sugar, He played in a Sugar Bowl. I think that was a 9-7 loss to Auburn. 1983, after a 1982 season, he played in the Rose Bowl. Now, I'm just a reporter. I've been fortunate enough to be in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl six times, four for Michigan and two for Michigan State. Yeah. And even as a media geek, walking into that stadium is just overwhelming. It's like, it's almost like a palace. It's like a special place in all the places I've been. What's it like to be a quarterback and run on the field at the granddaddy of them all? I mean, is that a life memory for you?
So it's a life memory, and it's the most unfortunate thing. People always ask you through your career and your life, what's, you know, from a sports standpoint, what's one of the most unfortunate things that occurred for you in football? And the most unfortunate thing that occurred for me in football was getting knocked out of that Rose Bowl. I had a major AC separation in my right shoulder.
Oh, that's right. You got hurt. I forgot that you got hurt.
So we had a great game plan for them. And I remember Bo walking up to me after that game and saying to me, you know, and I'm half woozy now because I've been on pain pills and stuff because it hurt so much. And he said, we got off the bus and he said, you know, we'd have won that game if he hadn't got hurt. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe we would have won the game. We had a great game plan. We were executing well when I got hurt. And, you know, Don Rogers, if you remember correctly, their big safety that was the number one pick for the Browns the following year, you know, he laid a good shot on me and separated my shoulder and knocked me out of the game. But that was probably the most disappointing thing because the Rose Bowl was like none of, you know, I'd been to the Rose Bowl my freshman year. Took a couple snaps behind Wagner at the very end of the game. So I'd been there.
We played
at the Blue Bonnet Bowl and then the Rose Bowl was in between the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
And so it was really, there was no bowl like it. I mean, I don't care where you were ranked, didn't matter. There was nothing like the Rose Bowl.
Well, disappointment's a part of life. We all understand that. So how disappointing was it to you that you didn't play in the NFL? And then conversely, you kind of became a star in Canada, didn't you? Tell us about that experience.
No, when I came out of college, everybody wanted me to play running back and wide receiver. That's what they were looking at me in the NFL combine at. And I didn't really want to play with running back or wide receiver at the time or defensive back. I hadn't played defensive back since my junior year in high school because I'd broken my kneecap my senior year and played my senior year in high school with a broken kneecap and never played a down of defense and so on and so forth. So Canada had drafted me. They had some weird draft where they drafted early and they had drafted me. So I went to Montreal because I wanted to play quarterback. Then I got the bug to come back to the NFL because San Diego had taken me in a supplemental draft the year they had a supplemental draft there. And I wanted to come back. Well, they moved me to running back and then I got hurt. I tore my hamstring a couple times, ended up getting cut, came back to Detroit. Detroit put me as a free safety, strong safety. And I literally walked out at one point. It's not what I wanted to do. So, you know, I made a decision that I didn't want to play football anymore. Never really regretted it. Never looked back at it. I hadn't played, and I was having a decent camp. I just didn't want to play defensive back. So.
Eli's been telling us what you did do. The implication is that you could buy all of us sitting here together.
Please,
and Eli Zarrett is no pauper. And you made all this money, Steve Smith, by selling what? What did you sell to people?
Body parts. Very body valuable, parts? Important body parts.
Yeah. No, I had a. I was a medical distributor for about 27 years, and I had an orthopedic implant company that I was contracted and had a staff and we sold medical devices.
So. And body parts. And body parts.
You know,
when in that interview that I played on Michigan Replay or that soundbite there with Bo and Brandy, I left your interview out of that, but you had said in the middle of your senior list, all I really want at this point is to get my degree. You really wanted that. Were you a serious student? You got the degree, and how hard was it to get a degree and be a football player at the same time? The output of thought and time and effort and energy just be monumental.
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting you say that because, you know, one of my goals was to own a company someday, and that's kind of what my goal. My goal wasn't to play professional sports, professional football, or anything like that. And I used to tell people that, and they'd kind of shake their head at me like, you're stupid, but my goal was to actually own businesses and stuff. And I never got a business degree, but I ended up getting a degree. And it was tough. I mean, you know, we, as a quarterback, starting quarterback, the time restrictions weren't the same as today. And, you know, I was taped in meetings at 12:30. So you were taking your classes between 8 and 12:30, trying to get enough credit hours to go to school. That was difficult.
Yeah. Were you shocked by the revelations and allegations of sexual abuse at University of Michigan athletic program by the late Dr. Anderson, or were you examined by him yourself and perhaps had an experience that left you not surprised?
You know, I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of ex-players about that. And I was shocked to hear the allegations to some degree. You know, I don't want to get into a lot of details because it's just kind of not worth talking about. I don't, I never viewed him that way. You know, he was our team physician and, you know, we did our physicals and we did some. What occurred never occurred to me. So it's really hard and difficult to have a conversation talking about something that I was never really involved in.
You look at running quarterbacks. There's been some great ones at Michigan. Maybe none better than you. I don't know, but Denard Robinson was pretty good.
He was better.
Now you got Joe Milton, who's 6'5". Seeing him run, I was impressed. I think he's faster than he looks. Is this going to be the key? Is this guy going to be like Cam Newton was the other day, yesterday with the Patriots, where he's like a runner like you were? Is this one way for them to like gear their offense?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's a big guy. I mean, I can't imagine as a quarterback, I mean, being that big. You know, you come back from my era of football, and I mean, you just didn't have quarterbacks who were that big like that. And I think he's a lot faster than he looks. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. The running game's much different. You know, the way they run their RPO stuff and the way they run these guys, it's a much different – it's not option football, right? So we ran quarterback draws and option football, and you're not seeing a lot of quarterback draws – option football. You're seeing these RPO type things. You're seeing the read the exposed end. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Michigan had a tough schedule, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens to them. There's some teams that are really good. You know, they're going to have a tough time with some of these teams.
You didn't throw the ball nearly as much as you wanted to at Michigan, right, Steve?
I wanted to throw it every play.
Wait a minute, but you love to make you.
I really didn't want to run the ball as much as I did.
Is that right?
Feel good, my hands were swollen.
That's funny.
Oh, in fact, what was it? You were the your sophomore year. Wolfolk led the team with 1,400 yards, but you were second. You had more than Stanley Edwards. You had more than Lawrence Ricks. Let's see. Yeah, you ran for 674 yards your sophomore year. You outgained Stanley and Ricks, who only had 92, who had fewer carries than you. So you didn't like running the ball, even though that's where you hung your hat.
It hurts, Eli.
Did you have a best friend or two at Michigan, like your favorite teammate or two ever? And what are they doing? Are you still in touch with them?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because one of the guys that I was a roommate with was a guy named Don Bracken, who punted for Green Bay for a number of years.
Yeah,
and Don actually passed away. He got a toe infection and died from
a toe infection.
He went sepsis and it killed him. Him and I used to stay in touch occasionally, and you know, I've got other guys I stay in touch with that were good friends. You know, you always in college, you always have a lot of good friends. So we don't call. I don't want to say we call each other often, but when we do talk, it's one of the guys. It's funny you say this about ex guys, because you remember Matt Elliott. So he's in the same business that I was in. Him and I talked probably
selling body parts.
Yeah. So,
easy to help.
Yeah.
So this is very ghoulish. Very ghoulish, Steve.
Yeah. Right. So you only talk to people that sell body parts, right? So he's him and I talk probably 3-4 days a week.
Well, you were
hey man, I just sold this amazing kidney last week.
He didn't sell body parts.
We didn't sell that kind of body parts.
He's talking about arms and legs and feet, Bob.
Well, we were talking the other day, and you were saying, you know, what your hobbies are, because you're 57, going to be 58, and or whatever it is, and you're retired. You got plenty of time in your hands. You can use it as you'd like. So, tell us about your hobbies and how you stay busy.
I have lots of outdoor hobbies with dune buggies, side by sides, high power dune buggies, and mopeds, and anything that I can act like a 5-year old. I'm outside doing. My wife thinks I'm a 5-year old. So you can see the picture. I hope you can see the picture on the back if it shows up back there. That's me jumping off the top of a hill in a long travel car.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the kind of stuff that I'm
and that's why, right? That's why you got a place in Florida, because you don't really ride mopeds very well in 9 feet of snow in Shorts Creek, Michigan, do you?
So I just got back from Florida, and I went on my boat and broke my finger because I was playing on the boat.
You keep doing that, you're going to have to buy your own body parts,
Steve. Steve, it's great visiting with you. If anybody else have anything else, or can we...
Yeah, hey, how about your family? Tell us about your family. How old are your kids? What are they doing now?
My son's 24. He's working for me, actually. I've retired from my core business 5 years ago. It'll be 5 years in January, but I kept a couple product lines, and he came to work for me, so he's working for me. My daughter's living down in Naples. She's 22. She started her own little business and stuff, and then works at a restaurant at various times as well. But everybody's doing good. You know, I've been married for a long time now, and knock on wood, my family's doing well. We're surviving all this 2020 COVID issues that are going on. I feel bad for a lot of people, but we've survived them well so far. And
you know what, Steve Smith? It sounds like a life well lived. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Other than my newly broken finger, it's been wonderful.
Yeah. Well, not nearly as good as the broken body parts you suffered back as a player. I know you had a lot of injuries. Steve, great catching up with you. Yeah, really glad you could spend the time with us. And thanks for the memories. Appreciate it.
Nice seeing all you guys.
Smitty. Glad you're doing so well.
All right. See you guys.
Bye-bye.
You know, one of the things I like most, if not the most, about this show is the chance to do just what we did, to talk to somebody who I covered as a player.
Yeah.
Back when being a sports reporter was so thrilling and it was so exciting to be a part of it. They weren't that much younger than me back then. I mean, I graduated in 72. I'm only 10 years older than Steve. So that's one of the thrills. And otherwise, I wouldn't have had a reason to call him. And to call him and have him on like this with you guys.
Yeah, and I must say this, if you're listening out there and you're not that familiar with this show yet, we get letters all the time from people. Thank you so much for reconnecting us to the guys that we used to follow. We love the fact that you guys have all these old former players on and just finding out about their careers, what they think about what they did and where they are now.
I echo that because I have often said that talking to former players is way tons more interesting than talking to current players.
Hell yes.
Who spit out all of the things they're taught to say, and you catch up with somebody like Steve Smith like we did today, or even a few weeks ago, I was filling in and we had Jake Wood on. I said, what in the heck are we going to talk to Jake Wood about? And I came out of that. I got a couple of texts from people that heard us as that was interesting. I said, you know what? I was skeptical and I thought that was interesting too, because I'd never met Jake Wood. And just to echo your point, I think it's so much fun to catch up. It's not just the heroes of our youth. It's the people that are listening that also, granted it's a certain age group that also remember these people, and you get to know somebody like Steve Smith. He reminded me we had lunch 30 years ago. I was embarrassed that I didn't even remember it. I hope he bought.
Well,
it's really fun to catch up.
Guys, they've lived a fuller life. They can reflect with more maturity and about the things that happen. They have a perspective on life and sports too. Hey, see you again on Thursday where the guest will be.
Yeah. Looking back, Mike Emmerich, arguably the greatest hockey announcer who ever lived, just retired.
Can't wait for this one.